Matthew Leckie puts Australia into the quarterfinals.
That is a magnificent goal by Owen Mabil.
Oh, Matty Ryan, wow! Keeping it out of the top corner like Superman.
Hello and welcome to the Socceroos podcast, where we go one-on-one with your favourite players to keep you connected with the Socceroos. My name is Michael Putterflam. On this episode, we chat with Socceroo cap number 576, Bailey Wright. For 13 years, Bailey has been based in the UK, plying his trade in some of the physically toughest leagues in the world. While millions of people across the globe watch the Netflix documentary Sunderland Till I Die, Bailey is one of the very few who've witnessed and been a part of Sunderland's rebuild after joining the club in 2020. The Socceroos defender talks through his football experiences at the Black Cats, while also delving into his interests off the field, which currently include a study on Football Australia as part of his Sports Business Director's degree. Bailey also talks through some of his fondest Socceroos memories and his assessment of being dubbed one of the nicest players in camp. But he also explains what it's like to deal with heartbreaking moments like missing out on the World Cup and how they've added fuel to his fire to always get better. Bailey provides a fascinating insight into life as a professional footballer and what it's like to mark the likes of Wayne Rooney and Sergio Aguero. Plus, he shares some cracking stories from his time as a kid playing grassroots football. So without further ado, here's the full chat with Bailey.
Bailey, thanks for having a chat today. Firstly, how's everything going with you and whereabouts are you in the world today?
Thanks for having the chat, mate. Looking forward to it. I am in Sunderland at the moment, up in the sunny northeast, or at least it was today. But yeah, just over here and enjoying my football here at Sunderland now. And yeah, life up in the northeast so far has been good.
So Sunderland looks to be going pretty strongly this season in League One. Yourself, you've played more than 25 games. How are you enjoying your football? And you know, what's the general feeling like around the club?
It's been good. We're having a good season. We're not where we want to be just yet, but we're taking strides in the right direction. Our performances are getting stronger and stronger, and you know, we're picking up a bit of momentum come this second half of the season, and that's important to get where we want to be. Obviously, the club like Sunderland, it's obvious that you know we want to get promoted this season, and you know, that's the goal for everyone within the club, and you know, and all the fans as well. So from a personal point of view, it's been nice to play majority of the games this year and be fit. Unfortunately, at the moment I've got a little calf problem, which will probably keep me out for a couple of weeks. Hopefully not too long. But you know, I've been feeling good physically, mentally. I've enjoyed my football and enjoyed the challenge of playing for a big club. You know, we've obviously missed fans this season, like you know most of the football world has. Not so much here in Australia because life's pretty normal. But over here, obviously, we've not had fans in the stadium for a while. So I think we're all hoping that will change pretty soon. And you know, we've got at the moment a final in the Papa John's Trophy to look forward to, and in March as well. So that will be at Wembley, and you know, will fans be there? Hopefully, but I guess we're at the mercy of what Boris wants to say and what rules he wants to make.
So as you mentioned, Sunderland, such a massive club, one that's famous around the world and has many fan supporters. Unfortunately, it's been a tough probably few years for the club, you know, a few years ago being in the Premier League and then dropping down. I'm sure plenty of fans also would have seen that in the Netflix series. But I guess from your perspective, are you able to kind of explain maybe a little bit about how the club has been rebuilding itself and looking to, yeah, go back up?
Yeah, I think, you know, the Netflix doco was a favourite documentary for a lot of people, I think. It created a lot of Sunderland fans around the world. For obvious reasons, it's you know, a massive club with a passionate support base, you know, incredible history, and all these things I've not been disappointed with. I've enjoyed my time here. And there has been a rebuilding at the club just this week. You know, I think you know, this season we've had a lot of change and a little bit of uncertainty at the club surrounding the ownership. But we've had a new owner come in, Kirill, and, you know, he's got a lot of big plans and visions for the club, and, you know, he's not messed about. He's got to work straight away, and, you know, everything we're hearing and seeing sounds great, and, you know, some people he's bringing in and his visions and his philosophies of what he's learnt, you know, for someone who's, I think he's only 23, seems to know a lot about the game and is, you know, extremely passionate about it. So there's a lot to look forward to there, from a player's point of view, staff, everyone involved in the club, fans. I think it's an exciting time for the club. Obviously, like I said, it's, you know, had a bit of uncertainty for a little while and the takeover's been rumoured for a long time. And as players, you know, those exterior noises, you know, external noises, you just got to put to one side and focus on your job, and that's winning football matches and, you know, doing your best for Sunderland Football Club. And, you know, with the combination of everything, you know, us doing our job and new ownership in and, you know, the background and backroom stuff taken care of, I think we can have a strong finish to the season. There's not another Netflix documentary being filmed. I've had a few people ask me that. A lot of Aussies have become fans, which is great. But yeah, there's no cameras in around the training ground. We're yeah, just focusing on our business, which is the main thing.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you have many mates back home, you know, asking when the next series is coming out, or, you know, trying to, I mean, like you said, it's created a lot of fans. So have you kind of seen that as well, the interest levels in the club actually rising because of the doco?
I wasn't here when the documentary was filmed. I was a fan before I even came to the club because of the documentary. But I actually I've played at the Stadium Light on a number of occasions, and obviously played for Australia against England there as well. And I always felt that there was this sense of, you know, something amazing about the place, you know, a real passion and pride around the city. And you certainly feel that when you come here, even more so when, you know, the stadium's filled and there's bums on seats, which we're all itching for. But yeah, the doco's definitely created a sense of, you know, fans around the world. I think in terms of Australia, I think most of my mates have watched the doco, some before I'd signed for Sunderland, and, you know, many whilst I've been here. And it seems like everyone knows so much about the club and just want Sunderland to do well. So, yeah, I think it's been, you know, good for the club in a number of ways, for sure. But whether it's changed the size of the club or, you know, the fan base around the world, I'm not sure. I wasn't at Sunderland before, but it sucked me in. So I'm a sucker for that one.
You mentioned before how, you know, playing at a big club and during these COVID times that you just had to concentrate on your football and try and block everything out. I guess you've been playing in England for over a decade now. You able to kind of explain to us how would the Bailey Wright of, you know, 12 years ago deal with those kind of pressures compared to the Bailey Wright of today?
Oh, interesting question. Yeah, I guess COVID's thrown its curveballs at everyone. Certainly, you know, in every industry and everyone around the world's felt the effects of it. Football's definitely felt it in a number of ways. But, you know, I count myself lucky. I can go to work every day, kick a ball around, train with my mates and love what I do. You know, a lot of people, that's been taken away from them, whether that be, you know, seeing their family and friends, whether that is them being able to go to work, travel, whatever it might be. You know, you kind of feel in football, you're in this little bubble where you can go, you can crack on, you're in your own little world, and go about your business. You know, the only thing that's missing, I guess, on Saturdays is the buzz and the atmosphere that's created from the fans and our supporters. And there is, you know, a lot that's different in training. There's a lot of protocols you have to follow and, you know, distancing and mask everywhere and, you know, only a certain amount of number of people in a room at a time or, you know, time slots. So there is those little challenges that come in and, you know, it's just routine. You build the routine and maximize it to the best as you can, and you find ways of, you know, making it work in your favor, and you find the positives. So, you know, now I'm 28 years old. I feel I'd probably handle it much better than I would have when I moved over at 16. But at 16, I was just, you know, just playing football freely, just couldn't believe, you know, I still can't believe that I'm, you know, a professional footballer and been able to be playing over in England for, you know, over a decade. I would never have thought that was possible. And a 16-year-old me probably would have made no excuses, whatever was thrown at them. So I don't know who would have handled it better, actually, to be honest, a younger me or an older me. I guess it's, you know, when you're younger, it's harder to see the big picture. And now, as you're older, you see the big picture and things, and why you have to be patient and stick to the basics and certain little things. And it's important. I've got a good base around me with my wife. You know, over here, we've, you know, neither of us have been able to see our family for a long time, and you know, we've got our own little family here, and that's you know, one we're adding to with a baby due in May. So that's been a focus and a driver for me. And like I said, it's, you know, big picture focus now. Back when I was 16, I was very short term, just focused on day to day. Now it's, yeah, month to month, year to year.
And as you said, you know, you've had that growth experience, but also football is just a small part of your life. And eventually, you know, you'll retire one day and, you know, have the rest of your life to look ahead to. So be really keen to learn about some of the things you've been doing to prepare yourself for life after football in terms of some of the studies that you've been doing. Yeah, but to kind of chat through some of the work you've been putting in outside of football.
Yeah, I guess, you know, when you ask that question of a 16-year-old compared to a 28-year-old me now, is the big, you know, the big picture focus. And, you know, I know playing football doesn't last forever, although I wish it did. It doesn't. And, you know, I very much look forward to whatever I do after playing football. You know, I'm passionate about sport. I'm passionate about football in Australia. I'm passionate about football and helping others and developing myself. And, you know, I want to be successful in whatever I do after football. I think, knowing myself and my personality, I'm one of them that, you know, when it does come to the end of my playing days, I want to move on to the next thing straight away. You know, not one to probably want to take too much time out of whatever I do. I just want to crack on and take on the next challenge. And at the moment, I'm aiming towards that. I'm currently, you know, in my first year of uni here in the UK, which is, you know, part-time with playing. It's a MSc in sports directorship. So it's been a real eye-opener for me. I wasn't very academic in school. You know, it's been a long time since I've been to school. When I left Australia, or even before then, you know, and looking back on it, I probably wish I'd have focused more on my schooling then than I did, but I'm here where I am today, and, you know, I've got no regrets, and I can still study, and you know, you're never too old to learn, and I'm developing myself for, like I said, a career after playing. You know, and the courses on sports directorship, which, you know, teaches you, really throws you out your comfort zone in many ways, and, you know, group learning and getting up and, you know, having discussions on topics that you're passionate about, and people questioning you, and things like that, and just further understanding yourself and your leadership styles, and you know, who you are as a person. So all these combined in the uni course and learning about what a sporting director does has been enjoyable, because, you know, I don't know if I want to be a sporting director exactly, but I know I want to stay involved in sport, probably football more so than anything, and I'd like to do my coaching badges, which is something that I'm working towards too, you know, certainly over the coming years, because I can see myself, you know, whether that be a coach, manager, or, you know, a sporting director in some capacity. It's something that excites me, and you know, I want to, you know, something that can make you travel the world, potentially bring me back to Australia, or keep me in the UK, has, you know, many opportunities. I just think it's, you know, with football, you've got so much spare time. It's important to keep yourself busy. And I think, you know, relaxing is a little bit of a myth. To relax is, I think a lot of people probably say it's, you know, probably keeping your mind busy and active and learning new things is relaxing for me anyway. So Yeah, that's something I've been working towards. And actually at the moment, I'm doing an audit with Football Australia as part of my uni assignment. And it's, you know, doing an audit on a high performance organisation, you know, and Football Australia is that. And it's been great for me to learn about, you know, what goes on behind the scenes and, you know, and how, you know, the top, the elite, you know, work day to day and what their processes are, you know, from the chairman, Chris Niku, to James, CEO, Arnie, who I've done, you know, had a lot of work with. But it's great to get an insight on his values and how he's built himself to be so successful and be who he is and how he operates and, you know, the standards he sets. It's been great to learn. And, you know, Trevor Morgan, our national technical director, has been, you know, fascinating and incredible to learn from. His knowledge and understanding and passion for football in Australia has been, you know, it's been incredible for me to learn and see that from him. You know, someone I think's, you know, been brilliant for Football Australia in such a short time in many respects. So there's a lot of stuff I've learnt in terms of my assignment. I've got a bit of emotional attachment to it as well, because, you know, I want to be excited for Australia's footballing future. You know, I've been part of that, part of the program, and want to see that develop. And, you know, one day, whether that be, you know, whatever opportunities might come, I'd love to in some way, you know, help develop players or help football in Australia. Like, you know, given, you know, so many people give me the chance, I'd love to, you know, roles reverse and be the one given the help and advice to, you know, the younger generation. So yeah, it's been exciting. It's been good. You know, I'm in the middle of my assignment now, still a bit to go, but it's been good.
What a brilliant experience in getting to work with, you know, some of those big names in Australian football. But I guess, studies aside, before you finish up, you still got a fair bit of playing to do. And one of the teams I'm sure you're very keen to join up with as soon as possible is the Socceroos, who haven't played together or been together for 16 months. So how excited are you at the prospect of reuniting with your teammates in a camp?
Yeah, it's like you say, you know, life after football and education is preparing me for that. And as James Johnson said, he says, you know, make sure you don't be prepared to move to the other side too soon. Enjoy your playing days whilst you can, because it's short enough as it is. And I certainly agree with that. I've definitely got high ambitions and set high goals for myself to achieve in playing, many of them with the national team, many of them with my club. And like you say, on the national team point of view, we've not been able to meet up for a long time now. And it does feel like that. You know, you feel like it's a year of missed opportunities for many of us, over a year. But we're all itching to meet up again. And, you know, the opportunity of, you know, a camp and games in March would be great. And one we're all hoping for, because we're itching to put that shirt back on and even just be available to be selected for that team. You know, there's no guarantees. But to have international football back, have a bit of normality and a routine to get back, you know, on our journey of qualifying for the World Cup. You know, we started our journey well. You know, every time we come in a camp, we enjoy it. You know, it's a great group. It's a good culture, a good atmosphere, and an enjoyable atmosphere to come into. So we're all itching to have those days back and represent our country and be successful. So, you know, it's not too far away. Keeping our fingers crossed, and everything can go to plan. And it'll be great to see everyone again and just enjoy our football.
So as we said, it's been a while since the team has been back together. And I'm sure the team's been having lots of Zoom calls and staying in touch and all of that. But I guess from your point of view, I guess who was some of the players over this 16-month period who you feel was who within the squad who really kicked on at club level? Or maybe who are some of the guys who you've kind of stayed close with over this period and, kept chatting with in regard to Socceroos?
Yeah. We've obviously, had a... You know, the joys of technology, jump on a Zoom call and you can interact with each other. And we've certainly had a good few catch-ups and conversations with, you know, Arnie and Joel and everyone at Football Australia. It's it's been good. It's been helpful, and you know, still not the real thing, but it's the next best thing, I guess. And it's, you know, a lot of boys have been playing and doing well for their clubs. You always follow each other's journeys and see how they're doing. And one for me is, you know, Harry. I think Harry Suter's had a great season at Stoke so far, and you know, you could almost see it happening. Really, he had a good season last year at Fleetwood, and he's done well when he's come in with us. And you know, he's cruising the championship really, but you know, it was never in doubt. So it's great to see him given his chance at Stoke, and obviously taking it. That's, you know, that's the biggest part of it. You know, you get the opportunity and take it, and he has, which is good to see a fellow Aussie doing well for their club. You know, there's a number of others we could probably list off. You know, Matty getting his move to Arsenal, which is incredible. And, you know, I think I can speak on behalf of, you know, majority of the squad. He's probably the ultimate professional, the best professional I've seen in the game as a bloke, as a player. And for him to get that opportunity is, you know, thoroughly deserved. I think no one will ever disagree with that. You know, certainly anyone who knows Matty and his work ethic and his discipline and his dedication. You know, it's great to see that, getting the rewards he deserves. And, you know, it's exciting when you come into camp and you see, you know, players at that level at the biggest clubs, some of the biggest clubs in the world. You know, it's good to see, and nice to be part of the journey in some ways when you can, you know, represent the country together. So it's good to see so many lads playing. I've kept in touch with a few, obviously the odd messages here and there. But no one probably specifically. It's probably random catch-ups here and there. And obviously spoke to Jacko a couple of times, and it's great to see him get a club because, you know, a player of his quality, I can imagine the frustrations and everything that must have been going through his head to be out of the game for so long. But, you know, he's hit the ground running there at Hibs, so he's obviously looked after himself and been ready to go. So it's great to see players like him as well back on the pitch and enjoying what they're doing, because, you know, I could only imagine how frustrating it would have been to be out of the game. But I'm sure it's all behind him now and he's enjoying it, so that's great.
I guess looking ahead to potentially getting back on the pitch, there must be something you're very excited for. But at the end of, you know, the next couple of years, there's potentially a World Cup on offer. So for you, how much is that a driving force to potentially play the World Cup?
Yeah, like I said, I've got big ambitions for myself and set high goals, you know, from international point of view and from club point of view. And, you know, the World Cup's at the top of that for me and, you know, my ultimate goal and, you know, all the process to get there. Obviously, I felt the disappointments of missing out in Russia. But all it does is really highlights that the shirt's never yours, you know, it's always up for grabs. You know, every opportunity you have to represent your country, you got to take it because you never know when might be your last. So I had the disappointments of missing out on Russia, although I felt the highs of qualifying for Russia, you know, and that's, you know, I still take a lot of pride in that. So, you know, obviously the first goal is to qualify and certainly go through and qualify in style in the first stages and go from there. But yeah, it's a big driving force for myself and everything I'm sort of gearing towards is sort of aimed at that. That's sort of the pinnacle, I guess, of where I want to get to. But, you know, there's a lot of hard work and small steps to be done and to be taken before that. So there's a lot of things to look forward to, you know, internationally in football. You know, we've got qualifiers, potentially if the Copa America goes ahead. Not too sure what the latest is with that. Not happening.
Not if what I've heard for like the last year is that it's like been on the ropes. As in for our participation, I guess if they're gonna have to play a whole bunch of June games, then probably not. But I don't know. Who knows in this world, really?
Yeah. So depending on what happens there, we'll see what happens. But there's so much to look forward to, and just having football back and, you know, being able to fill our fixtures and play our games, you know, March and June. I think we're all just focusing on that. And, you know, obviously World Cup's the aim and the goal, but it would just be great to be back playing and, you know, winning games for our country.
Got a couple more questions before I jump into a few quick fire ones, but yep. You've got a reputation for being basically the nicest Socceroo inside or outside of camp. What do you make of that? Do you think it's a true reputation? Do you think it's just deception? Yeah.
I'm a good actor. It's nice to hear that. I'm not sure everyone would say that, but I just guess it's my values and what I believe in. I treat, doesn't matter who anyone is, I treat everyone as important, because, you know, we're all human beings and we're all helping each other, and it feels good being a good person. I always think back to when people say, I don't care if someone doesn't like me and stuff like that, which, you know, if people don't like me for who I am, that's fine. But, you know, I kind of do care about if people like me or not. I think that's a natural human trait to have, that, you know, if you want to get the best out of people, you normally have to be liked. So people can do say what they want with that, I guess, but that's just me as a person. I think treat always equal and always important, because, yeah, we're human beings. But it's nice to hear that. You know, it's not something that I necessarily like aim towards, I guess, but it's just a values that I guess my mum and dad have instilled in me and brought me up to be respectful and kind and, you know, sometimes just a little bit of a hello, how are you, small conversation can mean something to someone, and, you know, yeah, something so simple can go a long way, and just being a good bloke and a good person. So I think we're, you know, kind of spoilt in that regard for our national team. We've got a good group of, you know, not only players but staff, and like I said, it's a nice culture to come into when, you know, you've got good people, genuine people that can have a laugh, have a joke, but genuinely care about each other. It's a good feeling. So I guess that's the Aussie upbringing, the Aussie mentality, and it's good to see.
And to finish up with one more question, before we get into quick fire ones, wanted to end with where it started. You're able to take us back to maybe some of your fondest memories playing for your grassroots football club, especially in the context of a period when everyone around Australia is signing up to play for their grassroots clubs.
Yeah, it's funny. I always remember back when Benny Coonan asked me this question, and I've got a little video clip of what I exactly say. And it was, I'll probably expand on it. I lived on the street where I grew up playing my soccer, so we called it then. And I remember I used to walk down the training, and as I used to get close to the training ground, there used to be this dog that always chased me by the football pitch along the fence. And I used to absolutely leg it because this dog was massive, scared me every time. And that was my thing of getting the training. That was my warm up. As soon as this dog come flying out of the fence to bark at me, I was like, I've got to get the training now, because if this dog gets out, it's going to eat me. So that used to be my process of going to my local soccer club, and then it would be training and scoring goals without a net. It was, you know, and then when you had the opportunity to have a net and you scored, it just felt unbelievable. I think I can speak from anyone who scores a goal with a net. It's like, you know, when you play basketball and you have a shot, there's no net. It's just crap. You don't get the sound, nothing. And football is the same. So that's my, you know, my memories of my local soccer club. It was down the road, you know, old dirt road with big potholes everywhere, and you know, Lang Warren Soccer Club it was. And, you know, I haven't been back there for a long time. And, you know, most of the time when I go home, my family don't live on that road anymore. I still have good memories, and there's still many good people at that club. Same people, you know, from when I come through there, are still there running that club, which is great to see. It's, you know, I always try to go back and support them where I can, because, like I said earlier, a lot of people gave me many good opportunities, and they were one of them that did. So, yeah, one day it'd be good to go back and watch them play again.
I'm sure they must be very proud of your achievements as well.
Yeah, I think so. I think they've, they are, for sure. And it's nice to, I guess, they have my shirts. Don't think they have one of my Sunderland shirts, which I'm sure I'll arrange for them, up on the walls in the, you know, in the club rooms. And it's good for, you know, I know when I was a young lad, if I'd always be looking up on the walls, and, you know, if there was someone who'd come through this club, you know, playing for a club like Sunderland and had played for the Socceroos, you know, on over 20 occasions, it'd be someone to look up to. And, you know, I look at it from that regard. It's a pretty special feeling and honor for myself to, you know, to be able to have my shirt up on the wall there, because, you know, I was just the, you know, same as everyone else that came through the doors there, an opportunity to enjoy their football and see what comes of it. And I guess for me, came a career. So it's great that, you know, I still have their support and they still have mine.
That sounds incredible. Really awesome to have that connection with the club where, you know, probably basically fell in love with football. Might finish off with a few quick fire questions, one or two word answers. And I might ask you a follow-up question if deemed necessary, but, What's the first Socceroos game you remember
playing in, or just?
Just as a young kid. Or that you attended.
I mean, my memory's not great. I've had a few knocks of the head, but the obvious one is when we qualified and John Aloisi scored that famous penalty. I think the whole lead up to that, the anxieties of all the games and getting so close. I can't remember them, you know, so specifically, but that one just sticks out. Like, you know, the day that football changed in Australia and we all started to believe again.
What's the favourite Socceroos game you've played in?
Against Honduras in Sydney when we qualified. That for me, can you say it? Squeaky bum time, that was that game. I'll say it now. That was the most tension or built up I've ever felt for a game, because you knew what was at stake. You know, most of the time in a season, if you've got a big game, you know, it's just that season being building up for it. This was a 4-year process to get to this point, to qualify for the World Cup. So much travel, so much dedication, so many frustrations and disappointments and highs and lows all led to this one moment. And, you know, big Mille just produced for us. And, you know, I often think about it now, like he was just Mr. Reliable. If you needed something done, he'd just get it done. And that was my fondest memory of that achievement on that day in front of friends and family and in front of our country.
Who's your favourite Socceroo of all time?
Oh, my favourite.
You can pick a couple if you want.
Yeah, obviously Lucas Neal obviously stands out as one. Timmy, you know, incredible what he's done for the game and his achievements and his record. Big Mille being Mr. Reliable. Big Mark Viduka. But, you know, I'm a big fan of Mark Milligan, you know, as a bloke, as a player. You know, I thought he had everything, you know, great teammate, great lad. So there's a few, but I'm always big fan of Millsy, to be honest.
Who's the best player you've played with or against?
I won't do with, because I don't like narrowing it down, because there's so many good players in their own respects, but the toughest opponent I've ever had. Again, sometimes you can go by name and then maybe didn't have the greatest game against you. Or you can go by reputation. But one of the most difficult games I've probably ever had. I'll go with Wayne Rooney, just because I've played on him against him on a number of I'm going to change that. Sorry, Rooney. Aguero. Because the way he played the game confused the crap out of me. I was like, I just couldn't mark him. Didn't know how to play against him. And then he comes and just scores. And you're just like, why is he so good at like just being everywhere that you don't want him to be? And obviously he's obviously a great player, isn't he? But just for me as a defender and, you know, having that challenge against someone like that, he just played the game different. And it was just like, what's he doing here? This just shouldn't be doing that. But he was just doing everything effortlessly.
Who's the funniest Socceroo currently in the squad?
Oh, currently? Well, the team changes all the time, doesn't it? So you never know who's in and out of the fold, really. some players can come back in. I'm tipping most, but a lot of people say Ryan McGowan. He's a funny bugger. Had some good laughs with him. But in the most recent, probably most recent squad, trying to think. We've got, you know, a lot of lads up for a good laugh. Boiler's a funny lad. I only really met him one or two camps, full of energy. I enjoyed his banter, to be fair. It was funny. So Boiler's probably up there. Must be that Scottish in them that just makes him funny.
Ryan Grant, mullet or no mullet?
He's a good-looking bloke, with or without it, isn't he? But credit to him for just being who he is, having whatever trim he wants and enjoying, you know, he's had a lot of stick for it. I'm sure he has. I've seen, you know, everything he's done recently too to raise so much money. Tells you what a great bloke he is. So, yeah, they both suit him. I'll be nice.
What's the first thing you think of when you're putting on the Socceroos jersey?
It's a heavy shirt. Comes with a lot of responsibility. And a lot of dedication from not only yourself, but, you know, friends and family that have got you there. I often think of my family, people in my life that have got me to where I am, and, you know, the responsibilities and honour and everything that comes with that shirt.
Obviously, spending 12 years in the UK, what's the best phrase you've picked up that's used commonly on the football pitch?
Whoa, commonly on the football pitch.
Or just around the change room, or doesn't have to be on the pitch, sorry.
Are you messing? I don't know, actually. It's a quick fire question, so I don't have a quick fire answer to that one. I'll probably say half of them without even realizing in it.
That's good enough.
I'm not sure.
What else we got? You got a favourite goal the Socceroos have scored at a World Cup before?
I think everyone probably say Timmy's in Brazil against the Netherlands. That was a pretty special goal. And to see it live was just unbelievable. A player that created big moments and rose up on big occasions.
What's the best couple of pieces of advice that you've received throughout your career?
My dad always used to use a phrase that he got from Sir Alex Ferguson, which was fail to prepare, then prepare to fail. And that was always, you know, a bit of a driver for me. And it was just like one of them, like how you do absolutely anything in your life is how you do everything. That's something that I live by. You know, those daily habits and everything you do is who you are as a human, who you are as a person. And in terms of other advice, yeah, just advice from my parents. You know, I've had a lot of good advice from coaches, coaching advice, but you know, none that specifically stand out. I think there's been a lot of good little small micro coaching that's helped me. So, yeah, just trying to think if there's any others that stand out. Probably, yeah, that advice from my dad.
Finished up with one more. What's your dream for Australian football?
I would love to see Australian footballers beating some of the best teams in the world on a regular occasion. So, I guess changing the whole, I asked this question to Trevor actually, and I thought his answer was absolutely brilliant. And one that's probably resonates with a lot of people at Football Australia is you want, I guess, the narrative to change of Australian footballers and what, you know, the world perceives us as. You know, we're Aussies that are hardworking and honest, you know, that's a given. We want to have the, you know, go to that next level and, you know, be some of the, you know, have a good core of some of the best players in the world, compete you know, we do compete in the highest level. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, taking that next step and, you know, not being an underdog, being, you know, the favourite in those big games in some of the best teams. And to do that, you know, our league, you know, needs to grow. You know, a second division coming in would be great and something that needs to happen. And more opportunities for our young lads. I think COVID's probably been, in many ways, and I hate to say it, but a bit of a blessing in disguise for football in Australia, because, you know, we've slashed budgets and, you know, cut our cost, and that's meant young lads getting their opportunities. And you know, I follow the A-League just because, you know, I've got many mates, and, you know, I follow it even more now because there's so many young Aussie players playing and doing well. You know, so that should be a real eye-opener to say, like, look, we've got good players here that we're producing that need opportunity. You know, and if we want to become that next level, we need more young players get given opportunities. Our league needs to get stronger. To do that, we need to bring in a second division and make it more competitive. You know, and I'd love to see that and see, you know, more development and, you know, more players at the highest level. We've had that in brief spells. We've got players at high levels now, but there's not enough for where we want to get to, and you know, the size of our nation and how we are as people. We're so competitive, so I'm sure we'll get there.
I'm sure Australian football fans all around Australia and indeed all around the world would, yeah, completely agree with everything you said, and hopefully we can just keep on taking those steps every single day and, yeah, make it happen for Australian football. But Bailey, thank you very much for your time today. It's been a very fascinating chat, and all the best with, you know, the upcoming games. And yeah, can't wait to see what happens next for both yourself at club and also international level.
Top man, I've enjoyed the chat. Hopefully I didn't put you to sleep too much.
Very enjoyable.
Good man.
Thanks for listening to the Socceroos podcast with guest Bailey Wright. To learn more about Bailey and other Socceroos, head to socceroos.com.au as well as the social channels for all the latest news and videos on the team. Tune in next time for the Socceroos podcast and let us know on social media if there's players and questions you want answered. Until then, goodbye.
Matthew Leckie puts Australia into the quarterfinals.
That is a magnificent goal by Owen Mabil.
Oh, Matty Ryan, wow! Keeping it out of the top corner like Superman.